Thanks for listening to this Eastlake podcast. Everything we do is supported by the generous donations of our local and online community. If you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by visiting eastlakecc.com. We hope you enjoy this week's message.
So my name is Lisa, and like Peter said, we are in a series called Evolve. And today I'm going to be sharing my personal evolution story over the last 35 years. My family and I have been a part of Eastlake for a little over 6 years, and usually you can find me back in the kids area serving with the kindergartners, or I'll do the readings during the music portion, and my favorite place to be is exactly where you guys are, in your comfy chairs, listening to someone else speak. I want to take a second to wish everyone a happy Father's Day. Today I get to celebrate my husband, who has turned out to be just a really, really incredible dad. And we got married at 19, so I had no idea that this guy, right there in the middle, would turn out to be this guy. Just so, so sweet. I love him so much. So today it's with a lot of gratitude and a lot of relief that I get to celebrate the tender way that he loves and cuddles our girls, how perfectly his loud and goofy personality shakes up our house, the beauty and truth that he brings into our home through his music, and his hyper-awareness of our well-being at any moment. He really is just an incredible dad and way more than I expected for my girls. And as amazing as it is to celebrate today, it's also an interesting day for me because today shines a light on the state of the relationship that I have with my own father. And I'm sure that today is a complicated day for a lot of us in the room, as most holidays usually are. My relationship with my dad looks a lot differently than it has in the past. My dad and I have seen a lot of life together, a lot of really beautiful things, and a lot of heartache and loss. And this has knit us together very, very tightly. We've spent most of our relationship very close, but the last couple of years has been a season of forced breaks and very slow re-entries to figure out where we belong in relationship to each other. So today is definitely a mix of emotions for me. There's some joy and happiness there, and then there's also a little heartache for me. And since it is Father's Day, I thought first that I should probably address the fact that I'm not a father. Surprise. But I am a daughter who inherited so much of the way that I see and view the world from her father, and I'm a mother to children who will inherit the same from me, so I thought I'd speak from that perspective. This last year of my life has been a year of awakening like no other year of my life. After 33 years, I felt like I finally got to meet myself for the first time, and I've been spending this last year getting to know the person that's sitting up here today. A couple of weeks ago, we had Bruce Sanguin here, and he talked about how the soil or the environment that we grow up in as children affects our capacity to inhabit and express love. And he shared a little bit about what made some of his environments growing up not conducive to growth and creativity. And his talk felt like a punch in my stomach when I heard it. It was so good, and if you didn't get a chance to catch it, I would really encourage you to do that. It was just one of those talks where I felt very acknowledged and seen and understood and heard. I've always felt like there was so much of my childhood that has affected the person I grew up to be, and I've always been so scared to go in and open up that part of my life to understand it better. And it wasn't until the last couple of years that I felt safe enough in a spiritual community to be able to do that. A year and a half ago, I sat on Ryan and Michelle's couch after they had come back from this really intensive week at a therapy retreat, and they were describing the process that they had just gone through about how it dealt with the ways that we learn to survive and cope as children, and how those coping mechanisms turn into patterns of behavior that affect us as an adult and stick with us, and they change the way that we operate in the world and how we see the world. And so this is something I'm going to be talking a lot about today, this idea of patterns. So I just want to say that one more time. It's the behaviors that we adopt as children in order to receive love and protection that turn into patterns of behavior that rule the way that we operate in the world. And I remember them being so calm and serene because they had just gotten back from this, and so they had done all of the hard work already there. And they, as they were describing this, I just remember how like sweet and gentle they were talking about it. But for me, my stomach was in knots and my heart was racing, and I just had tears down my face because for so long I've held this stuff so closely and tightly to me and been so afraid of it. And this was the first time that I thought, oh my gosh, I might have an answer to figure out how to deal with all of this stuff. Up until this point, I thought that my emotional woundings from my childhood were too much for me to handle, and that they defined me, and that they always would. And I thought that if I were to dive into those hurts to understand them better, I would get stuck in that sadness forever and not be able to find myself out. And I thought that eventually it would lead to me losing everything that I'd built up. So today, I want to share with you a lot of my story. And I just want to give you a little bit of a heads up that there's some painful and heavy parts to hear, but I would just encourage you to stick with me through it. I've learned that we find ourselves in the raw, honest stories of others, and sometimes finding out that we're not alone is the first step into our healing. I know that it's been that way for me. And so today I want to offer you my story in honesty, in hopes that you find your own pain acknowledged, and maybe find a path to healing for yourself as well. So let's go for it. When I was 2, my mother was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And then when I was 7, she died of bone cancer. And I don't remember very much from this time in my life because I was so young, but the actual memories that I have are very weighted and very heavy for me. I remember when she decided that she needed to move into her own apartment because the state of her mind had caused her to be very fearful of my dad, and so she felt like she needed to be alone. And I remember being in the backseat of our car and reaching out to say goodbye to her and just being so confused about why she was leaving us. I didn't understand. I remember the way that her body looked towards the end of her battle with cancer, lying in her hospital bed in her apartment because she wasn't able to move, and just her body being nothing but skin and bones, and being in so much pain that even adjusting her legs or the slightest movements hurt her. And it was difficult for her to do it on her own, so one time I was by myself with her, and she asked me to help her just uncross her legs, and as soon as I touched her body, she started screaming at me because it hurt so bad for her. And so I had to go get another adult in a different apartment to come and help me. And then I remember the ambulance driving away, one of the last times that I saw her alive, and then her open casket funeral. After my mom died, my dad remarried a woman who had 2 children of her own and was also grieving the loss of her husband. And this marriage was a nightmare, to put it nicely. As much as it hurt for me to lose my mom, it was this age from 7 to 12 that I remember the most pain and trauma. And like I said, she had 2 biological children of her own, and I felt like she always preferred them over my brother and I. And always having this like desperate need for her to see something special in me and trying so hard to please her all the time. She and my dad fought often, and it was often physical and very loud, and there was a cycle that kind of happened. It would be late at night. I would start to hear muffled yelling through the walls, and then I'd hear my dad's footsteps come down the stairs. The door would swing open, and he'd say, "Lisa, go grab your brother. It's time for us to go." And this happened more often than I can remember. I don't even know how many times that happened. And then we'd move out and eventually move back in, and that cycle would continue over and over again. My stepmom was very manipulative towards me and would often use me as a pawn in their fights and arguments. There was this one time before my dad was able to come down and get me to tell us that we needed to go, that she pulled me aside and she said, "Lisa, when your dad comes to get you, I want you to tell him that you want to stay with me this time. And if you don't, I'm going to call the cops and he's going to be arrested." And so when he came down to get me, I, of course, told him, I want to stay with Susan. I don't want to go with you this time. And remember how painful that was for me to do that, because I wanted to protect him so badly. It was also during this marriage, when I was around 9 or 10, that my stepbrother sexually molested me as I pretended to sleep in my bed because I didn't know what else to do. After about 5 years, they finally divorced, and my dad remarried one last time. This marriage was so much better than anything that we'd known, but as I'm sure a lot of us can relate to on some level, blended family life can still be complicated even if things are okay. And my brother and I were almost teenagers at this time, and so he, my dad, and I had gotten to this rhythm of life that worked really well for us. And I know that it was really hard for her to find her place in that little circle. And so they ended up splitting up and moving into different homes until after we graduated high school. So just to recap, by the age of 12, I'd experienced the loss of my mother, sexual and emotional abuse. I witnessed physical abuse and was constantly surrounded by chaos. And this was the environment that I, as a little girl, was shaped in. This was the environment that I was given to blossom in, but the soil was no good. My environment forced me into survival mode and stunted my emotional growth as a child. And I never went into any kind of therapy. Our family never went into therapy for it, so we just all did the best with what we could. And as a child, this is what I learned. I learned how to suppress difficult emotions like sadness and anger and hurt and fear, how to be a peacemaker and avoid conflict. I learned that the smaller and quieter I was, the safer I was, and how to withdraw and disconnect from my environment and my body, and that I'm a victim with no power and no voice. And I'm sure if we went around the room, everyone's childhood would look different than the next person. And maybe yours held a lot of trauma like mine, and you learned behaviors because it brought you safety and protection. Or maybe you look back on your childhood and you have mostly fond memories. It was a pretty good childhood. And you learned behaviors because they were rewarded with praise or affection. Maybe for you, it wasn't that you needed to be small or quiet or suppress your emotions, like me. You might have learned that you needed to be loud or funny or pretty or act out to receive attention. Or maybe there are parts of you that you felt like you needed to shut down to be loved. Or maybe you never quite figured out what it was that you needed to do to receive love, and so you grew up feeling unlovable. And I'm not saying that our parents necessarily explicitly told us these things, that you need to do this in order for me to love you. I'm just saying that this is from the perspective of a child with limited knowledge and experience and virtually no power, that this is the way that they perceive their world looking up in this big adult world. Children are smart and resilient and will adapt to the behaviors that bring them love and safety and belonging. And after so many years of operating out of these beliefs and these behaviors, they take shape and become patterns into our lives. And for me, these patterns I've described of suppressing emotions and being small and being quiet and not using my voice became my personality. They became what I saw myself to be and what others saw in me. And I carried them into adulthood and operated out of these compulsions without even being aware that I was doing that or where they came from. And as an adult, it's been really easy for these, I mean kind of easy, for these patterns to not emerge too much in most of my superficial relationships. And honestly, as an adult, most of my relationships were superficial because I withdrew and was so quiet and never used my voice and never really let people get to know me. But in my marriage, it was just too close of a relationship to not have these patterns emerge in very significant ways. Like when my daughter Abby was born, my first daughter, she was born only 4 pounds. It was through an emergency C-section, and then she was in the NICU the first week of her life, so that was already in itself a lot. And then bringing her home and teaching her how to eat and trying to get her to breastfeed, and then that wouldn't work, so I'd have to bottle feed and then pump, and I'd have to do this every hour and a half because she was so little that it was so much, and I was so overwhelmed. And then I went back to work, and I was gone from my house for 40 plus hours a week. So that additional pressure just kind of pushed me over the edge. And Dave and I, during that season, grew apart from each other. I didn't know how to talk to him about how overwhelmed or tired I was, or that I needed help. I didn't even know how to figure out what it was that I needed help with. And I just kept getting stuck with this feeling that I don't want to be a burden on him, and I don't know how to fix it. So if there's no way to fix it, why talk about it? And so I kept pushing away from him and got quieter and quieter at home. And then I started feeding into this infatuation with a guy at work, because that surfacey relationship was more comfortable for me than it was to dive deep into these feelings of inadequacy and fear that I was feeling at home. A decade later from that, I can look back on the situation and many others in my marriage of 15 years and see that these behaviors of withdrawing or disengaging and protecting others' feelings by suppressing my own feelings were tools that I had learned as a child to keep me safe, but they were also driving me into isolation. But I'd used them so often and for so long that they had become second nature to me. That basically, I had no idea that I had no language to say that I was withdrawing or pulling away from Dave or I was becoming small. I just did it. And I definitely wouldn't have had the tools to understand why I was doing that. And for you, your patterns and motivations that pop up might look a lot different than mine. Maybe for you, as a child, you received affection by achieving, or achieving was some way that you had some sense of control in your life as a little kid. And so now you overwork yourself, or you beat yourself up if you don't reach whatever goal you had put in place. Or maybe you felt like you needed to be the good little girl. And so then you grew up and you decided that you don't use your voice, you don't make waves, or maybe you rebel against being a good little girl. And so you find yourself consistently choosing harmful things for yourself. Or maybe you learned that you should never be angry. So now if someone hurts you, you stuff it down until it becomes bitterness or resentment. Or something that I used to do, and I still have tendencies to do, is that I would stuff it down until I lash out uncontrollably on everybody around me. Basically, what are the negative patterns that feel compulsive in your life, and where did you learn that you needed to act that way? So although I could see how these patterns were emerging in my marriage, it was really in my relationship with my dad that they were the most impactful and also the most hidden and disguised. They'd become so ingrained in the way that I interacted with him that I couldn't see the ways that I protected myself, protected our relationship at cost to myself. Throughout the course of my childhood, there was a deep dependence and connectedness established between my dad and I. I needed him to be all good, never do anything wrong, my safety, my security, with no faults. I needed him to be the one person I could count on because everything else was so chaotic. And I don't think this is much differently than the way that we all see our parents growing up. I think we, as little kids, we all need our parents to be all good, you know? But I do think that because we experienced so much loss together, that it bonded us in a foundational way around that loss. And this codependency didn't magically disappear when I became an adult. As I became more physically independent from my dad, I stayed emotionally dependent on his connection for my own validation and security. And I used all of those patterns that I talked about to protect him, his feelings, and the relationship we built. When I got married and moved away at 19, it was really difficult for my dad and I because we missed each other so much. And over those next 13 years, it became more and more difficult for me to communicate with him because every time I would talk to him, I would feel that sadness and longing. And it was hard for two reasons. First of all, I never ever wanted to be the source of my dad's pain. But also, talking to him, I would miss him and it would be sad for me, and I didn't know what to do with that sadness. I wasn't equipped to deal with emotions like that. And so I started just saying things that I thought would make it better, at least in the short term. I started avoiding topics that might bring up pain and edge around questions where I had to disappoint him or say no to him. and I made lots and lots of empty promises. I didn't realize it, but I had started creating an emissary, a diplomatic representative of myself, to send out to my dad so that I wouldn't risk hurting him or losing him. So I would just give him what I thought he needed without fully presenting myself to him. And when our church announced a statement of full inclusion a couple years ago, everything came to a head for us. There was a lot of backlash from the general Christian community that was really loud and noisy and difficult to deal with, but there was also a lot of disapproval and disappointment coming from close friends and family, and for me, my dad was the most vocal person in my circle. And oftentimes, he conveyed his disagreement very publicly over social media, and I felt like I was left unprotected and exposed to the criticism of other people, because if he was allowed to do that, then it made me feel like he was opening it up for anyone else to be able to do that. Last year, I read this book by Megan Watterson called Reveal, and she talks about her self-discovery journey, and there's this portion in it where she talks about kind of what pushed her over the edge into her needing to figure out what her voice sounded like without the expectations of other people. And this line, I felt like, resonated so much with where I was. There comes a time in your life when the love you thought would never leave you does, and at last you have the opportunity to come face to face with your own loving. When all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I didn't have my dad's support and validation, I felt lost. I found out that once that was gone, I was faced with my own loving, and I was found very, very lacking. And it was also around this time that my daughter Abby had turned 7, and seeing her as a 7-year-old at the same time, that was the age that I was when I lost my mom, it was starting to trigger reactions from that trauma in me. And so, like I had done so many times, I started pulling away from her, and I started pulling away from my dad and from my husband, Dave. I had carried that 7-year-old girl, the little girl in me that had lost so much and then gone on to lose so much more. I'd carried that girl's tools of survival into my adult life, and it wasn't working anymore. Because a 7-year-old was never meant to raise her own kids or be in a marriage or deal with adult responsibilities or tell her parents, "It hurts me when you treat me this way." I was having a major identity crisis, and I realized I needed help to dig myself out of this one. So this is the state that I found myself in when I was on Ryan and Michelle's couch in November of 2015. And it was here that I decided that I was safe enough and that maybe I had some form of an answer to start opening up to this part of my life. And I felt like what made it safe for me was that I saw other people going into this type of work, diving into the painful parts of their life to understand to pull meaning from it and understand why we do the things that we do. And that gave me permission to do the same for myself. So I started reaching out to my close friends and started telling portions of my story to them just to kind of feel it out and see if it really was safe for me to do that. And then I started going to therapy. And last April, I went on that week retreat, which was a huge deal for me to go off on my own to go do something. I had to take a plane there and find the bus and then take an Uber and interact with so many strangers. And I had no idea what these people were going to make me do once I finally got there. But going through that whole process was very empowering for me, and for me to do all of the hard work that happened at that retreat and to come out and I was still alive when I came back. And since that retreat, I've just been trying to soak up as much as I can. I've learned from so many people and resources, like so many of the speakers here at Eastlake, my therapist, personal growth tools like the Enneagram, which the Enneagram has been a huge, huge tool for me to better understand the motivations behind my behavior, and many books and podcasts. Another big thing for me has been staying connected and engaged with my close friends throughout this process, because this type of inner work was very difficult and draining, and it could feel very lonely. And if I were to go into my patterns of withdrawing, and I would have just isolated myself. And when I say inner work, I'm just talking about turning inward to figure out why we do the things that we do, instead of being compulsive or reactive in our behavior. Instead of saying, well, that person treated me that way, and so I must do this in response to that. It's the work of becoming an objective observer to our behavior, understanding where that behavior came from, and ultimately uncovering the core belief about ourselves that produced that behavior. For me, the core belief that I had about myself was that I am broken, that all of the hurt I'd been through had left me damaged at the very core of who I am. And that brokenness was the filter that I saw myself and my life through. And so all of my decisions and behavior were based out of the fear that I am too broken to fully engage and fully function in life as myself. And so I created a false self to live my life for me. But sometime over this last year of diving inward, that core belief has changed for me. Now as an adult, now that I have more experiences, more knowledge, tools, and resources, I don't have to operate out of that belief that I learned as a child. I have a choice to change it. And I don't believe I'm broken anymore. I believe I'm fully intact, whole, strong, and very resilient. I started this process a little over a year ago, and I'm not finished yet by any means, but I am very proud of the progress that I've made, because I've freed up some of that space by getting rid of some of these unhealthy patterns and beliefs about myself. I'm starting to change the soil that I'm growing in. So now those seeds of creativity for love that Bruce talked about a couple weeks ago, they're starting to fall onto good soil. I wanted to show you guys a couple pictures. This picture is of me getting baptized after I came back from that retreat, so this was last April. It was really important for me to put a line in the sand of where I'm dying to my old self, the way I used to believe, what I used to believe about myself, living into so many expectations from other people, and resurrecting into this commitment that I will commit to being who I am, regardless of what I feel like other people might need from me. I got this tattoo. It's hard to see, but because I've always loved people with tattoos, and I always thought, but I'm not the kind of girl that gets a tattoo. But I've just come to realize I can be any girl that I want to be. So if I like tattoos, I'll get a tattoo. And there's some symbolism in here that helps remind me to take care of myself and live authentically through the person that I've come to learn about myself over the last year. And then this next picture is me participating in the Women's March, which I would have never, ever done a year ago. And then out of this Women's March, I ended up starting a blog because I had to process some of the feedback that I was getting for participating in that march. And so I've realized that writing has been a huge way for me to unpack and process things. And then also just being up here today, speaking to you guys, having to go through all of this stuff and process and unpack and learn more about myself and figure out, oh man, I still do a lot of these things. There's still definitely work to be done. So as I wrap up today, I want to encourage you guys in a few things. First, to just share your story. Our stories can be our prison or they can be our contribution. For me, sharing my story with my close friends at the beginning was just my first step into healing and understanding who I really am. And it's led me to beautiful things like being able to be here in front of you guys today. And when you share your story, you'll come to realize that you really are not alone in this. You're not alone in your struggles. You're not alone in your pain. We all have really crappy things that we've either had to deal with or that we're dealing with now or we know that we're going to have to deal with. And it's really easy for us to feel alone because everyone works so hard to try and look normal and to look like they've got everything together. But as you share your story, you give permission for other people to share their story, and you'll learn that you're really not alone in this. Secondly, I want to encourage you that this inner work into understanding why we do what we do is worth it, and it's so important. It's been very difficult for me to go into the darkest parts of my story and the really yucky motivations for why I do the things that I do. But I already see the positive impact that it's having in my life. I actually love and appreciate and enjoy myself now. I have much closer friendships, more intimacy in my marriage, and so much more patience and understanding for the position that my children are in now. And just as a little side note, I want you to know that this is a very safe place for you to figure out what this journey can look like for you, because it will look much differently than mine, because you have different experiences than I have had. And so this has been a safe place for me to kind of try things and see if they work or not, and then also to just be able to be in those places of deep sadness and still show up. There were many Sundays that I would come in, and as soon as I would drop my kids off and I would sit down in the music, I would just start crying as soon as the first beat of the music started, and then I would cry all throughout the service, all through going through the lobby to pick up my kids, and then all the way home, and I never ever felt judged for that. So I also want to just say thank you for everyone who's here, who creates this environment for people to come in that much pain and be able to sit in it long enough to understand it. So let's keep doing that. I think that's awesome. Also, this work is important, because if we don't take responsibility for our behavior, if we choose to live our lives compulsively, we will live our lives as victims and everyone suffers. You suffer and everyone around you suffers. We may not be at fault for the patterns of behavior we've adopted, but we are responsible for them. When we choose to take responsibility for our patterns, we empower ourselves and we make room for the flow of creative love which benefits everyone. This is the work that Jesus asks us to enter into, absorbing the pain and transforming it into love. Thich Nhat Hanh says, "When I heal my wounds, it heals my father's wounds and heals the wounds of future generations, and the cycle stops." This is the gift we give our children. If we stop the cycle of passing down harmful or unfruitful patterns that our parents handed down to us, that were handed down to them, we give our kids permission to do the same for us. We acknowledge that we will most definitely hand down to them things that they will need to correct and work through, and we give them permission to acknowledge that and then go beyond us, to evolve past us. And just to be clear, they don't need our permission to do it. They will most likely do it anyways. It will just make it easier for them if we do that. And through this work, the gift we give our parents is coming full circle into a truer empathy and gratitude for them. When we allow ourselves to be human and messy, and we see that within us is the potential for good and bad, and that we're doing the best with what we have, then it's easier to give that same grace to those around us. Although my dad and I are still dealing with the consequences of our behaviors over the last many, many years, it's getting easier and easier to let go of that pedestal that I've held him up on for so long. And now that I don't need him to be perfect, I can better understand the ways that he's been able to move past and evolve past what he was given. And I can more fully see the beautiful contributions he's made into my life. And finally, I just want to encourage you that whether you're thinking about going into this type of work, or if you're in the middle of it and you feel like you are just doing the worst job ever, to just be easy on yourself, to honor the space between no longer and not yet. In other words, don't be frustrated with the person you are now because you don't feel like you're the person you should be. You are exactly where you're supposed to be. Even if you feel like you're failing miserably, the place that you are in right now is a necessary step in your forward progression. And remember that becoming aware of and dying to this false self that we create is very painful. And it's very easy to beat ourselves up when we struggle to let go of that person. Try to love yourself and be gentle towards yourself every step of the way. One of the things I like to do when I find myself wanting to just like close up and hunker down because I feel like I'm either messing up too much or it's just too painful, is just taking a deep breath, putting my hand on my heart, and saying, Lisa, it's okay. You don't have to figure this out right now. And for all of us parents on this Father's Day, in the most gentle way I can, I would encourage you to commit to this work of transformation. Bruce talked about how we don't need perfect soil to grow, we just need it to be good enough. And so may that be an encouragement for you to do what you can as you can, because we have so much influence over the soil that our children are shaped in. So would you guys stand with me as I close? So as we go out this week, may we continue to make this a safe place for people to come in all of their pain, exactly as they are. And may we commit to this work that Jesus emulated for us and invites us into, of absorbing pain and transforming it into love so that we can truly be a beneficial presence in the world. Thank you guys so much for listening to me today. Have an awesome week.